Here we have two people that have literally vanished into the wilderness.
Greg Lynn lost his temper.
I panicked to save myself.
How does a pilot turn into a murderer? I found long buried secrets simmering just below the surface.
Everyone was scared of him.
She was pleading. I thought, this is not good.
Anybody that would kill their wife's pet is a monster.
Huntsman, the latest season of the ABC's true crime podcast, Unravel. Hear Unravel now on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It wasn't like I felt tortured about the decision. It just felt like we need to deal with the cancer, and then when that's gone, I just won't have any breasts.
I was just like, oh, they're trying to kill me and I want them gone.
I was a mum of two teenage boys, and I really wanted to model to them what it meant to have a positive body image with an asymmetrical body.
One of the things she said to me was, if you meet someone in the future and you no longer have breasts, how will you feel if that's the barrier to you having a relationship with them?
Boobs. Big ones, small ones, uneven boobs, jiggly boobs, perky ones. No matter their shape, size, and texture, as a society, we're obsessed with them. They are fetishized, romanticized, criticized, sexualized. They nurture. They titillate. They let us know when the aircon's on too bloody cold. They hurt. They please. Sometimes they get in the way. But what happens when your breasts make you sick? What's it like to have them removed and not reconstructed? Every year in Australia, around 20,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. Of those, around 40% will need a mastectomy, surgery to remove the breast. According to the Cancer Council of Australia, almost a third of women who have a mastectomy will choose to have some kind of reconstruction. The reasons why a woman may opt to stay flat or reconstruct are complex, but cost, access to services, and worry about further recovery time will play a part. In this episode, you'll hear from women who have had either one or both breasts removed because of breast cancer and decided not to reconstruct. It brings up a whole lot of questions about breasts, what they mean as a woman out in the world, and what changes when your breasts change. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about going flat.
I got dressed up in some nice lingerie and set up the camera and took some self-timed photos of myself.
This is Aarti. She's 45 and last year, after being diagnosed with breast cancer, decided to do a sexy photo shoot in her bedroom.
I had lost all my hair from the chemotherapy, so I was wearing a wig.
Aarti wanted to commemorate her boobs because she was about to have surgery to have one removed.
Being a photographer as well, I thought, oh, this could be actually fun. And it also felt like, well, even though this is me with two breasts, one of these breasts is toxic, you know, it's killing me. Mm. So it was a really mixed sort of turmoil of emotions at that time.
Around 6 months earlier, Aarti had noticed a lump behind the nipple on her right breast. It turns out that lump was cancerous.
So from diagnosis to starting chemotherapy, it was about 2 to 3 weeks from memory. It was all very, very fast.
After her chemo treatment was finished, Aarti's tumour had shrunk, but she was told she'd still need to have a mastectomy to remove that right breast.
Pretty confronting, but at the same time, I'd had that time of going through chemo to sort of mentally prepare myself. You know, the tumour felt pretty large, and I'd heard women who'd had a lumpectomy and then ended up having to go back for extra surgeries anyway because the margins hadn't been cleared. So yeah, I think I was pretty prepared for a mastectomy.
Okay. Was any consideration given to having a double mastectomy at this point?
at that appointment when I was told I would need to have a mastectomy, I asked the question, well, can I have a double mastectomy because I don't want to have to go through this again? So I asked, look, if I was to have a double at this time, what would that mean for lowering my risk?
Arthi had already gone through genetic testing to see if she carried the gene for breast cancer, known as the BRCA gene. If a woman has the BRCA gene, the risk of her getting breast cancer in her lifetime is over 70%. Thankfully for Arthi, her genetic testing came back clear. So doctors recommended just the single mastectomy.
I was pretty comfortable with the decision just to have the single mastectomy.
Okay, so there's a plan in place to have a single mastectomy. What discussion was there at that time around breast reconstruction?
So for me, I was pretty clear from the get-go that I wasn't super keen on an autologous reconstruction.
An autologous reconstruction, also known as flap reconstruction, involves taking the tissue from one part of the body to rebuild the breast. In Arthi's case, doctors had suggested taking tissue from her abdomen or from her back.
I'd had a cesarean for my first child and had taken a long time over the years to sort of get back to being physically fit and active and just felt really kind of strong in my own body and just didn't want to do anything that might compromise that.
The other option for Arthi was to have an implant.
The breast scan nurse told me that if I was to have an implant, I would still have the option of going flat later on if I didn't like how the implant looked or felt.
Right.
However, if I did it the other way around, so I went completely flat, just because of the way my body shape is, it would be more difficult to go then to having some form of reconstruction.
Arthi spent time deliberating this choice, to go flat on one side or reconstruct.
I had lots and lots of conversations with my husband about what it would mean to, you know, have only one breast and how I would feel having one natural breast and then one that was a reconstructed breast, and thinking about the way that it would sit on my chest versus the way that my other breast is sort of naturally shaped. Mm. I was a mum of two teenage boys who I'd been able to breastfeed, and I really wanted to model to them what it meant to have a positive body image with an asymmetrical body and, you know, being really confident in that.
Arthi also had lots of chats with her breast cancer nurses.
Said, look, just give it to me straight. If I have a reconstruction, what are the chances I will need to have further surgeries and just be in hospital for longer? And they said, in your case, because you still have to have radiation, there's at least a 50% chance. I just went, okay, no, I just don't want that for myself. Every surgery I have from here on in needs to be with the purpose of either saving or prolonging my life.
It is a very privileged role to be asked to sort of walk alongside someone in what is often, you know, the most confronting, challenging part of their life.
This is Dr. Charlotte Totman. She's a psycho-oncologist with a private practice in Adelaide.
So a psycho-oncologist is just sexy language for a clinical psychologist who specialises in cancer-related distress.
So Charlotte counsels cancer patients through the transition from their old life pre-diagnosis to a whole new reality post-diagnosis.
I call it the snow globe effect. It's like you completely shift your perspective in terms of what your values and priorities might be, what they used to be and then what they are post-diagnosis and treatment. And so things that didn't used to matter now do matter, and things that mattered before maybe don't matter anymore.
7 years ago, Charlotte, the therapist, suddenly became the patient.
We were on holiday and I was putting on some sunblock and my hand just grazed the underside of my right breast, and I thought, that feels like there's something there that wasn't there before.
Once she got back home, Charlotte went to get the lump checked out by her surgeon, Andrew. He had some bad news.
I'm not going to pull any punches, Charlotte. You have breast cancer.
Things moved quickly after that.
You literally go from you've got breast cancer to now this is what we're going to do about it. And, you know, my brain was in a washing machine.
Doctors recommended surgery and wanted to move fast.
So we opted for a bilateral, what's called a radical mastectomy, which is when both breasts are removed. We didn't do nipple sparing or skin sparing. Andrew and my oncologist explained that every little bit of tissue that you leave behind presents some risk.
At this stage, Charlotte didn't know if she carried the BRCA gene. Those results take 8 to 10 weeks to come through, and her surgeon wanted to operate straight away. They decided to go ahead and remove as much tissue as possible from both sides.
We were all about no risk.
No risk.
It wasn't like I felt tortured about the decision. It just felt like we need to deal with the cancer, and then when that's gone, I just won't have any breasts.
And Charlotte, how did you know that you didn't want to have a reconstruction?
Mostly for my life, I didn't wear a bra because I didn't need one. I had teeny weeny breasts. So I think I thought small breasts, small loss, and that not having breasts or the loss of small breasts would not be as big a deal as bigger breast.
Mm.
And I certainly do have clients who have proudly and delightfully had quite large breasts and have said to me, you know, my breasts were spectacular and my breasts were tremendous. Mm-hmm. That's not how my breasts were. I have recognised that small breast doesn't equal small loss.
The day after her surgery, Charlotte looked at her new body in the hospital mirror.
And I take my hospital gown off. The swelling had started, the bruising had started, I was standing up. And when we talk about a flat chest, oh my God, it's such a misnomer. It's not flat, you know, it's not the Himalayas, but it's, you run your hand over it, it's very lumpy. And in those hours of the first day post-op, it was, you know, pretty confronting.
In the days and weeks after surgery, Charlotte had to do what she'd been recommending to her clients for years.
Stand in front of the mirror every morning after a shower or naked, put your hands above your head and really look at your chest or at your scars for about 5 seconds, which sounds like a really short time, but actually when you're doing that, it feels like forever. And you do that every day to really consciously observe. And so that's challenging the gaze avoidance tendency.
One thing I wanted to ask you was whether your breasts were incorporated into your sex life.
They were a big part of our sex life. I talk about sex and adjusting to changes after cancer as about learning new dance steps. And I quite often reference the fact that I reckon most of us have got a set of dance steps, might be about a dozen, might be more, might be less. And I reckon maybe about three of our dance steps were probably to do with my breasts. And they were a very important part of foreplay. It was how I got ready to orgasm. And so without those parts of my body, without my nipples, our sex life has never been the same. It's not bad. We've found our way back and we've got a healthy post-cancer sex life. But, oh boy, do I miss that sensation. And I miss the look and the feel, and I miss what Rob would do with my breasts and how that would translate into like arousal for me.
One of the things she said to me was, if you meet someone in the future and you no longer have breasts, how will you feel if that's the barrier to you having a relationship with them?
This is Kate. She's 38 and was diagnosed with breast cancer last May. The cancer was in her left breast and her surgeon recommended a mastectomy on that side only. But Kate wanted both of her breasts gone, much to her doctor's horror.
I thought, this body part has betrayed me. I don't want to sit here and worry for the rest of my life that it's going to betray me again, that it's going to come back. The other thing she said to me was, what if you change your mind about having kids? So I made a decision a long time ago. I didn't want children.
Yeah.
And she said, what if you change your mind and you want to breastfeed?
Wow. So you had these two phantoms, phantom children and phantom future partner.
Exactly.
That you needed to keep your breasts to please or yep. feed.
Yeah.
How did you feel about your boobs before cancer?
They were a bit annoying.
Mm.
I had very big breasts, a double D or an E, and I used to joke that I would just put a cup on my head and if it fit my head, it would fit my boobs, and that was how I bought bras.
That means you had two big heads on your chest.
Yes.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Kate eventually moved from the private system to a public hospital for treatment. First, she needed to go through chemotherapy and then she would have a mastectomy.
And the surgeons were all male in that team and they never questioned. They said, okay, we could go single mastectomy if you want to do recon or if you want to have, you know, one remaining breast. And I said, nope, take them both. And I didn't need a rationale for them. They just said, yeah, sure, no worries, it's your body.
Huh. Is that right? They just accepted you saying what you wanted.
Yep.
Did you ever consider getting a reconstruction?
No. No, they gave me time to think about it, but I had already made a decision that recon wasn't for me, mm-hmm. in part because of all of the things that I wanted to be able to do. Recon just would have been a barrier or made those things harder.
Kate wanted to be active again, to go back to horse riding and swimming. She didn't want more medical intervention and a longer recovery time. It was like her boobs were the boogeyman.
I was just like, oh, they're trying to kill me and I want them gone. And I just, aside from the fact that I needed to wait to get through chemo and recover from that, I knew the signs behind that and could come to terms with it. But it was very scary
living
those months with these cancerous breasts.
So you felt like they were enemies?
Yeah. And I couldn't look at them. I was building a tiny house and I decided not to install mirrors in my house that whole time because I just didn't want to look at my body. I avoided mirrors, avoided my reflection as much as possible. And so the moment that they sat me in the bed in pre-op, I was just like, oh, I'm here. They're not going to change the plan at this last moment. So I knew I was safe. I knew I was going to get what I needed to feel safe moving forward in my life.
After her double mastectomy, Kate woke up groggy and in pain, but she'd prepared to face her new body in the mirror.
It was like a weight was lifted off my shoulders, no pun intended, that this thing that had made me feel like I needed to make myself smaller was now gone. And I was walking into a new version of myself. And a version that had cut away the cancerous, sick, harmful, murderous part of my body.
Kate, have you faced any judgment for staying flat?
A little bit. There was an incident going into work one day. I commute on the train and there was a, you know, younger couple sitting across from me and the guy turns to his girlfriend and says, is that an it?
Oh.
And I was never this gutsy before cancer, but since cancer, it's just kind of like, seriously, who gives a shit? Just speak up, speak your mind. And I stood up and I said, not that it actually matters, but I've lost my boobs to breast cancer. And I got off the train and that was it.
Dr. Charlotte Totman has seen firsthand the importance our culture places on boobs.
We all grow up with those gender stereotypes, and certainly not having breasts is really confronting one of the most fundamental stereotypes. It's reinforced in the way that we teach our little boys and girls about what it is to be a boy and a girl and how men and women relate and what's normal and how people are raised in families.
When we see women with no breasts, it can be confronting.
I think it looks like loss. I think it looks like the absence of something that for most of us we like and we hold dear. You know, you think about symbolism, what breasts represent. They represent femininity and they represent sexuality and they represent motherhood. And often they're soft and squishy and they feel nice.
When you're counselling other people going through this, what are your recommendations post-surgery to adjust to this new body?
To take time out for yourself, fundamentally. I mean, I'm a great proponent of do less for longer. Take some time. A lot of breast cancer happens in people's middle years when they've got a whole lot of obligations set up. And for a lot of women, they've never, ever, ever had the chance to just take some time out of the rat race and to prioritise their physical and psychological well-being. And you can't rush this stuff.
Charlotte's getting used to being a flatty out in the world, and her approach may seem bold.
If I'm at a beach resort or the beach or whatever, I just wear my bikini bottoms. I don't wear a top anymore. And I'm more comfortable doing that than I am wearing a top over a flat chest.
Sure.
And there are more women who are willing to, again, take that risk and do that. I think the other thing is that we are turning the tide very slowly in the medical profession. There has been often a tendency for medicos to leapfrog over a conversation about a reconstructive choice, and historically would have said things like, who would you like to be referred to for your reconstruction, rather than starting with, have you thought about reconstruction? Mm. Have you thought about going flat? Now, that said, there are women who will absolutely do better with a reconstruction, because for them, their version of themselves, their version of the female form, their attachment to a silhouette, to having breasts, that will be really well suited to a reconstructive process. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, and this certainly isn't, I'm not a crusader for going flat. Mm. I am an advocate for informed and empowered decision-making in all cases.
Charlotte is very frank about how her body has changed since her double mastectomy and choosing to stay flat, and so is her husband, Rob.
My husband says, I love you, I love your body, I love your broken body. And people say to me, God, isn't that a bit weird? And I'm like, no, I love it, I love it, I love it, because my body, it is a bit broken. Mm. And I'm so cool with him loving my broken body. I don't want to hear that he loves my body because I don't really know if I can believe that. But when he says, oh, I love your broken body, I'm like, oh yeah, he really does.
Like Charlotte, Arthi, who opted to stay flat after a single mastectomy and became what's known in the community as a uni boober, also has a cheerleader husband.
Yeah, he just said, I will always love you for you, and you'll always be beautiful to me, no matter what.
Arthi's immediate family was 100% supportive of her decision, but she did feel some pressure to reconstruct.
I probably felt more pressure from just seeing the kind of different versions of quote-unquote normal bodies just in the public and on social media. And also, I guess, just growing up as a South Asian woman, you know, you've sort of ingrained with a very fixed ideal of what the female form looks like.
Mm. Is having one breast the new normal for you?
It is. It really is. And I really feel that it's been the best possible decision for me. Yeah.
Because?
It sounds weird, but I still enjoy having one breast. It's still enjoyable to have the sensation during intimacy, and it's also helpful for the times where I do want to wear a bra with a prosthesis. It just seems to somehow help keep things in place.
Arthi is thinking about getting some body art to commemorate what she's lived through.
I did come across some images online of women with single mastectomies who had beautiful, gorgeous tattoos on their scar side.
What sort of tattoo? Do you have a vision?
Probably something to do with nature and flowers. I'm a gardener, and gardening is one of the things that kept me sane and kept me going throughout my treatment last year.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was in the depths of chemo and hardly able to move from one end of the house to the other, I would still try and find a few minutes each day to just pull out some weeds or even just sit in the garden, and just really kept me grounded and feeling like I could beat this.
I love my chest. I walk around in my garden topless.
Like Arthi, Kate also loves gardening. And post-mastectomy, she's been out with the secateurs.
A bee or a butterfly or something lands on my chest, and it's just this beautiful moment of clarity that I made the right decision.
Topless gardening.
Yeah. Oh, you got to try it. Even with breasts, it is just so liberating, and it's so nice at dusk, and I love being out there.
Do you have mirrors in your house now, Kate?
Yeah, I actually installed wardrobes a couple of months ago with sliding
mirrors.
On the doors, and I don't hate looking at my reflection anymore. You know, my chest isn't perfect. It doesn't look the way that I thought it would look when I decided to have a mastectomy.
Mm, what do you mean?
There's just like little bits of skin left over, because I didn't go with an aesthetic closure, which is where it's where the plastic surgeons come in and they sort of make it look a bit pretty. But at the end of the day, I look at every single scar, every single little bit of skin left over, and I think to myself, you've fought a battle, Kate. Like, this is the way that your body looks, and just embrace her and take care of her and nurture her and nourish her, because she's got you through all of this.
We're all fighting some kind of battle. If not right now, then I'm afraid to say it, but probably sometime soon, my friends. The battle against breast cancer is one that affects 20,000 Australian ladies a year. If this is a battle you're fighting, we are sending extra big hugs from Ladies We Need to Talk HQ. And listen, what you choose to do with your breasts, whether they're cancerous or not, is your choice. The expectations of real or phantom people are of no concern to you and I. Hot tip, our tits are none of anyone's business. Big thanks to all the women who shared their stories with us, including Dr. Charlotte Totman, who has her own podcast called Upfront About Breast Cancer, What You Don't Know Until You Do. And if you love what we do, please give us a rating or a review. It'll only take you a sec and it helps other people find the show. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gundungurra, Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. This episode was produced by Elsa Silberstein with additional production from Sarah Mashman. Supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick and our executive producer is Alex Lolbach. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.